Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Local Report Exiles podcast in association with Vaux Breweries. I'm Brett Lyons Davis from Milton Keynes. And on today's pod, we'll be talking all about the Gillingham game, which is happening right now, that none of us can actually see, but we are getting Twitter updates. As it's international weekend, we've got nothing to talk about from this weekend's game, so we'll be mentioning all about Sunderland's ex-international players for both England, and as one of our guys on the pod today is Michael from Ireland as well. We've asked more Twitter questions and you've answered, plus your branch news, and of course, now the very famous Playing Away. This week, though, I am joined by Michael Dunn from Dublin. Michael, how are you?
All good. How are you, mate? All good.
I'm very good, thank you, mate. Are you sort of disappointed yesterday with the Ireland result?
Yeah, I was actually at the match, but probably not surprised. We're still looking for a striker since the Robbie Keane days. We'll give it a rattle in the playoffs, see what happens.
Well, fingers crossed you'll be joining us next season. We've also got Danny Roberts from Lincoln. Danny, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you for having me.
Good man. And you're you're Chris Kamara today, really, aren't you? Sort of like keeping us abreast of all the news from the match at Gillingham.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like this. Nothing's happening, but Luke and Allen seems to be apparently having a good game, being our only kind of threat down the right-hand side. I'll keep you all updated, I guess.
I want to know, though, whenever there's a goal, though, you've got to have some kind of, like, really excited, you know, there's a goal, and interrupt everything.
I'll do the Martin McAnally one, go, oh, my God! And then you'll have to go into Danny in Lincoln. Yeah,
perfect. That's what we practiced in. And lastly, and by no means least, Chris Wynne, the saviour of this pod, came in at the last minute to jump on board when no one else would. I was looking out for a hero. Chris, you're that man. How are you, sir?
Well, what an introduction that is. Always a pleasure, Brett.
Good man. Thanks for joining us. I will, though, jump straight in and discuss, obviously, the FA Cup game. Now, I know a lot of people were disappointed, obviously, that we drew 1-1 in the first game, winning a replay tonight. Obviously, I was delighted because it gives us about 15, 20 minutes of content to talk about. And even more, well, I say delighted, but more bamboozled when I saw that starting lineup. Guys, I'll jump on you first, Michael, but I'll just read out the team tonight. So you've got Burge in goal, what looks like a three at the back, possibly with wing backs, is how I've kind of read that. So it is 09, Ozturk, Brandon Taylor, De Bock and Hume. Then you've got Ledbetter and Power. And then also Maguire, Watmore, Grigg. Michael, what were your thoughts on that lineup?
Oh, that three in the centre halves is absolutely depressing hearing it, isn't it?
Weird. It's a weird lineup for me, personally.
A few injury problems at the moment, though, as well, I suppose. But five at the back, I mean, the football hasn't been too good so far either. So it seems a bit strange going on the defensive away to Gillingham in the FA Cup. But I'd rather us just go for it, really. But three at the back now. Don't like to send De Bock as centre half as well, is that right?
That's what I'm only going from, like, when I saw the lineup and how I kind of read it. Because I know when we played Oxford, I was at that game and I think De Bock was part of he was on the left side of a three centre backs, which yeah. I suppose in one option it gives Hume and 09 pace to get, you know,
like to go space forward, to get,
yeah. Yeah, but it's also the middle sort of worries me, you know. There's no sort of pace in that, if for me,
no,
whatsoever.
Not very mobile.
Yeah, and then so you've got up front, you've got Maguire. Well, you've got, I'm going off, you know, sort of my own interpretation of it. So you'll have Maguire and Watmore sort of behind Grigg, making a 2-1 almost up front. Yeah, where do we sit with this then, guys? You know, Danny, I'll jump with you. What's your thoughts on it?
I think it could be Denver Hume left wing. Four at the back, Denver Hume on the left. It could be the three at the back, wing backs, give us that kind of attacking in play. But, I mean, we've got no one else to play, really, do we? So,
no, well, there is that. So you could always have, like, say, looking at it, you could have like Maguire or Watmore on the right-hand side then. So, yeah, I see. And then, well, yeah, so Watmore on the right.
Hume Maguire number 10.
Maguire number 10. It could be that. So
there's no kind of tweets to signify who's playing where at the moment. So, I mean, when I get my Chris Kamara updates, I'll try letting you know. But yeah, I'll probably perceive it as a 4-5-1, but it could also be that 3-4-3.
One thing I am really looking forward to, though, is reading the Swansea's, because obviously we're going doing this live as the match is on. Once the game is actually played and everybody realises what the starting lineup is, I'm looking forward to all those tweets telling us how wrong we were, sort of like what our thoughts were on it, because, you know, oh God, I can't believe he said Hume was a left wing back. He was clearly a winger. If that is the case and you want to like complain on Twitter, my name's John Stacey. So yeah, please feel free to tell me where I went wrong there. Chris, your thoughts on the FA Cup in general. Do you want to be in it? Do you want to be out of it? Where do you see this one?
Well, yeah, just at the beginning, I'd like us to get to the third round. Third round is where we should be coming in. So that's at least where I want us to go out. I don't think we're going to have a cup run from League One. It's certainly not anywhere near the top of the priority list. So, you know, let's just get to the third round just to save a bit of grace and then bow out against a half-decent side and a nice home game, get the fans up for it. I just hope, I mean, we're just talking about formations there. I hope he's not messing around too much before these two home games, because these, you know, starting Saturday, we've got these kind of Coventry and Burton, two home games in the space of 4 days. And I just hope he's starting to get the shape that he wants for those two home games. If he's still messing about with five at the back and he's kind of, you know, dipping his toe in rather than saying, this is how we're going to set up, then it just gets us a little bit worried. I want to go into these two home games nice and solid, get a plan in place. He's had the international break, so hopefully he's been working on this shape. He's been working on a plan, and, you know, he needs these two home games to really get us going, because we're going to be quickly running out of games if we keep dropping points.
No, we need back-to-back wins, actually. I do think already we need 6 points on the board. And I also agree with what you're saying, that I want to get to the third round at least. I don't want a home game, though. I want an away game to, like, Spurs and go to, like, a nice big stadium. Instead of going to these Burtons and Gillinghams, and I want to go back to a really big stadium for once, instead of being at the little place, you know, where we used to be, and just reminisce.
Yeah, there's that. But I want the stadium light to be bouncing. It hasn't been bouncing for too long. We need a real game to get the crowd back in. And if we give a good performance in that one, you know, the crowds will be more up for the home games in general. We just need to get the noise levels up at the stadium and get going again. So a game like that would do nicely.
Well, looking forward then to sort of like this weekend, Danny, for yourself, where do you, you know, who do you want to see starting on Saturday then? I say, because today's it looks like a bit of an experimental lineup. Personally, I'd say with us not playing this weekend, I'd have hoped that we'd had as many first team players in there so we can start getting, I've mentioned it before, I want players to, you know, get partners and sort of, you know, your centre backs are used to each other. I appreciate our two injured today, but, you know, your left back and your left winger, a partnership going with those guys. But, you know, for yourself, what do you want to see, who do you want to see starting on Saturday?
It's difficult to get a kind of handle on who's fit at the moment, because obviously we've been playing with the team starting 11, the formation, and you've got this player, is he fit, is he not? So Lyndon Gooch falls into that category. Is he going to be fit for Saturday? Because ideally we need him back as soon as possible. I feel like we've really missed him since his injury. We haven't really had any kind of attacking intent in our team since he's left. Obviously, everyone is well publicised that Aidan McGiddy's really struggling at the moment, or is perceived to be really struggling at the moment. Duncan Watmore, he runs really fast, and since the Tranmere game, he hasn't really done much. So I would say we're desperately needing Gooch back. So if he's fit, I'd want him in the starting 11. Depends what Chris Maguire turns up. If he is the number 10 and running the game, then no one can really handle him. But if it's a Chris Maguire who's shirking away from the game, then he's not really worth playing on the pitch. It's a really difficult one. What centre backs are fit? Are Lynch and Willis going to be ready for Saturday? It's just really concerning. For one, what a certainty is, I would say Burge definitely has to start ahead of McLaughlin.
100%.
I think that's everyone's opinion. Right back, it depends if who's fit up front, but I'll probably say Luke 09, then the Hume left back, and then just keep Lynch and Willis if fit at that back four, and just keep that back four the same. That's the only way that back four are going to kind of get that continuity in the play and know what everyone's doing. Midfield, Ledbetter can't start. I mean, John mentioned it a lot in the last podcast that he was just slow, and just every second step is slowing the ball down and trying to decide what he's going to do next. And if you're playing him with a power, it's not going to work. So anyone but Ledbetter. It appears Dylan McGeoch is just not favoured. So I imagine he won't start. So Power and Dobson in the centre, if Dobson's fit. And yeah, up front, it's God knows who, because every striker we have are just not very good or fat. So, yeah.
I must say, one thing you did say then, I was nodding away, is when you mentioned Gooch, because he got injured in that Tranmere game. He seems to really split the fan base for some reason, Gooch. I actually really like him. I think he offers a lot. He's still not the complete four-round player. Sometimes he'll try and put his head down and run into a bit of a cul-de-sac. But I like players who at least, he always looks up for it. And I do think he is, especially this season, when he's been in the team, we are a better team with him in. Michael, I'll pass over to you. Obviously, Danny went through the team there. For yourself, where do you see us this Saturday?
Yeah, I was kind of echoing a lot of the statements he was making there, in fairness. But it was a very thorough going through the team there, in fairness to you, Danny. Well done. See, I was kind of same. You're saying Gooch splitting opinion. I'd nearly be the opposite. I was never really a Gooch fan. Kind of always saw him as a bit of a headless chicken. Kind of ran up his own arse nearly sometimes, going nowhere with it. And his end product sometimes flattered to deceive a little bit. But I think people still give, this is not just an Irish bias, but I think people give McGeady stick. But if there's any guy in the squad now who's gonna win the game for us, it is going to be McGeady. So I think if he's fit, whether he's struggling for form or not, I'd have him absolutely starting. I would probably play Watmore as well on the right. He might be a little bit the same as Gooch in terms of maybe running up blind alleyways, but he's direct and he puts fear of God into defenders, because I don't think he even knows what he's going to do sometimes, which is nearly works to his advantage. absolutely, I think you have to start Dobson and Power in midfield, because Ledbetter is just, to be honest, he hasn't been the same player since he came back. Like he looks like a different player, even from the few years ago, Middlesbrough. And you'd obviously hope that Lynch and Willis are going to be fit, because they've been quite solid for us, in fairness to them. I mean, we haven't conceded. One thing I have to say, under Parkinson, we actually haven't conceded many goals. It's nearly the other end where we're struggling to put a few in the back of the net. Up front, as Danny said, pick who you want, because every single one of them are rubbish at the moment. So I don't think I have a preference. I would like to see McNulty maybe just get a bit of a consistent run of the squad in the starting 11, because he actually doesn't seem to be too favoured under Parkinson either. Greig seems to be getting a lot of starts at the moment, and I don't know if that's just down to the fact that the rest of them are not fit. And
I get the impression of Greig that it's almost like, if I keep playing him enough, he'll score eventually, and then it'll just snowball and everything will click into place with him. You know, he's sort of playing him against like so-called lesser opposition, and it's still not working for him.
I've been hoping for that since the start, though. Like, since he came last year, every time he gets a goal, you're thinking, oh, now the run's going to happen. The run's going to happen after the next goal. But, like, I mean, he scored against Burnley in the Cup, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I was thinking after that, now, that's good. Premier League, goal in the Cup now. This is your chance to get on a run. But it hasn't happened for him. He started against Bolton, I think, that weekend, and he was useless up front. But to be fair, the whole team was useless that day. I was over at that game. I just couldn't believe how poor Greig was up front. His movement, for a guy who's kind of known for his movement in the box, he just... it's just not there at the moment. Like, I don't know if it's confidence or what it is, just seems completely disinterested.
No, it is a very strange one. Chris, so we've had two quite differing opinions there. So, you know, McGeady in, McGeady out, Gooch in, Gooch out. Where are you seeing this?
Yeah, lads, there's a few points there. I mean, for Lyndon Gooch, this is what, thinking back, this is his third full season, really. I mean, you could probably say that under Coleman, he started to come through. And, well, you could maybe argue with kind of Grayson just before that. So probably his third full season, really, as a first-team player in the first-team squad. So, I mean, it's not a huge amount of experience, but he should be kind of really establishing himself now. And I think the jury, fair to say, the jury's still out on him. But I think in those 3 years, he's really only had, I'd say, in my opinion, kind of 5 months really good form. And that was the beginning of the last season. So from August, I think he came out the blocks. I mean, that the first day of the season, Charlton getting that last-minute goal, you know, his tail was right up at the beginning of the season, and he really got off to a flying start last season. And he was creating on the wing. He was, you know, he was getting into the box. He was scoring some goals. He was getting into some good positions. He was one of the first kind of players down on the team sheet, I think, for Jack Ross between kind of August and December last year. And kind of mirroring what the team did as a whole, he just kind of nosedived after Christmas and kind of just disappeared. I mean, I think he picked up an injury or two, and I know I think he had his first child as well. So I think all those kind of things affected him, but he's just never picked up since then. If we get that Lyndon Gooch back, then obviously, especially the way he was playing in last season and the impact he was having in terms of assists and goals, then, you know, I can't wait to see that again, but I just hope it's a when and not an if we see it again. And then you kind of mentioned McGeady, Michael, and I know you did mention it's not again an Irish bias, but I mean, just on pure talent, I think in the piece we put up today about people's views are whether McGeady should be starting and et cetera and things like that. And I put in there that, you know, McGeady is probably the most talented player in League One. And I'm not sure many people can argue against that, but he's just not shown it. And I can't remember. Really, you know, towards the end of last season, he was shown it in kind of glimpses, but he was just fading out in games and disappearing. And if you play him kind of left midfield, the problem is you're putting your fullback under so much pressure because he's not going to double up on wingers and things like that. So your left back's basically needing a centre midfielder to come across because McGeady's just not going to do that. If you put McGeady behind a striker, at times he's shown he can maybe do that, but he's not mobile enough to be an option for the midfielders on the ball all the time. So he kind of disappears from there as well. He seemed to me that the most effective kind of way of utilising McGeady this season has been from the bench, where you bring him on for the last 20 minutes when the League One kind of defenders are tiring, and you stick McGeady on, he takes a few players on and he can kind of knock one right in the far corner or something like that. But I think McGeady being McGeady, he's not going to like that. His heart's not going to be in it coming off the bench in League One. And it's about how has Parkinson got the man management skills to kind of cope with that. So I think that's going to be a story that's going to unfold throughout the season with Parkinson and McGeady, because I'm not sure anyone will come in and take his wages or buy him from us. So it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out. And then the third one I was going to mention was Will Gregg. You mentioned Will Gregg. I've got a feeling that, and could be completely off the mark, but I think Will Gregg was probably part of Parkinson's interview process. I would imagine that one of the questions will have been from, you know, Meth and, you know, whoever it was, Donald or whoever was on that panel, would have been, you know, we have got a problem in terms of Will Gregg up front and to get him started, well, what are you going to do about it? And he's probably given some sort of answer that's helped him get the job. And to deploy whatever plan he's got for Gregg, he's got to play him. So, you know, otherwise, if he just gives up on Gregg, then if he has given this spiel about, oh, you know, I'll get him going and I'll, you know, he'll find the net again under me and all this sort of stuff, then he's under pressure if he just suddenly gives up on that project and goes with the other strikers. So he just keeps persevering with him. And I think I agree. I think, sorry, I can't remember what it was, Danny or Michael who said, I think McNulty's our best striker at the moment, but doesn't look all that fit. So I think he needs a run of games as well. So I don't know whether that spiel was positive or negative.
But McNulty, I saw the Coventry game, Portsmouth, sorry. It was a Sky game. And McNulty was absolutely everywhere. And I think it was actually, he got injured, if I remember rightly, about 20 minutes to go. and Charlie White came on for him. But he was just non-stop harassing and like chasing players down. And at the time, he looked everything that he was doing, everything that Will Grigg wasn't doing. And so he picked that injury up and he was out for a few games. And I think, again, one of the guys said that he's never sort of got a run of games going. And he does look a little bit out of shape. You know, I think that's everyone can see that. But, you know, I would like to see him get 3-4 games, you know, and see what he can do. Because I think there's definitely something in there, but we're not really seeing it at all at the moment. But I will move on from the game this weekend. And one thing that we have been doing over the last few weeks is speaking to different branches of Exiles around the country. In fact, we even had some over in North America a few weeks back. And this week, we're actually, funny enough, joined by a member of the Irish branch, who you might have guessed because he's a massive Aidan McGeady fan. Michael, you are obviously a member of the Irish Supporters Association. What's the official title of it over there?
Irish Black Cats.
You're the Irish Black Cats. Yeah. And so how long have you been a member and how long has the actual branch been going?
Well, I actually formed the group last February because I was just, I remember saying this before, I was bored of going over to games on my own nearly for the year before that because, as you might know, it's hard to come across a couple of Sunderland fans in Dublin, never mind Ireland. So we're trying to see, suss it out who was around. So I just set up a Twitter page, got in touch with the club. Chris Waters was very good, in fairness. He helped me out getting it set up, as did James Wallace. I put it out on Twitter, Facebook, and the response was fairly good, to be fair. Now, we had our first meetup for the Bristol Rovers Cup semi in a pub in town. I think we got 15 or 16 lads there. It was a mixture of lads from the Northeast and then just Irish lads who supported Sunderland, and they all said the same things, like, God, I didn't know there was another one of me in Ireland, like, so it actually was great. So since then we've got bigger and bigger. I think there's about 45 of us now, and to be fair, there's a good chunk of us that would go like semi-regularly to games. I've been to 4 games this year and some of the lads have been to a couple more. I know there's actually 3 of them going to the Coventry game on Saturday. So I'll give a shout out to Gary, Aidan and Dan that are going over on Saturday. If you see them with the flag, go over and say hello. So we've set up for about a year, just under a year now, and it's going quite well. Like, we have a few socials. We're in the middle of setting up a five-a-side Astro team for the lads in Dublin as well. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. So we're all over social media too.
Nice, that's brilliant. And one thing it is like really good is even when we're doing sort of this pod and people have like message and so forth. And I always say there's so many like Sunderland fans dotted about. Like even us 4 guys talking now. So you've got, you know, Lincoln, Sheffield, Dublin, and Milton Keynes. You know, there's literally pockets of Sunderland fans everywhere, and it is great to meet up. And I know a lot of, you know, it is difficult when you do feel like you're the only Sunderland fan in the village. So, you know, so if you're over in Ireland, you know, give the guys a call, you know, go on to it. So they're all over social media. What's the Twitter handle that you're on?
At Dublin_Cats.
So Dublin_Cats. Get in touch with the guys. And I say, because how many games do you reckon you get to a city? Like, is it most games some of your guys are over with? Or
I mean, there was a couple of us over at Shrewsbury. We actually met Richard with Shrewsbury. And then there's a few lads, there's 3 lads going to Coventry on Saturday. I think I'm going to Gillingham away, the league game, first week of December. And then there's a few going to Blackpool as well. And obviously there's a load of us going over in February to Ipswich at home because of the whole international branches meetup that weekend. So that'll be interesting. But just to say as well, if there's anyone in Dublin over the weekend of the Blackpool game at home, we're having a kind of a Christmas do for any, it can be for any Sunderland fans that are around at the time. Do by all means meet. We'll be meeting in Murray's Bar in O'Connell Street. That'll be on Twitter. And it's great though, because to be fair, we have a WhatsApp group. I'd be writing in saying, oh, how many lads are coming out tonight to watch the game? Remember the last one was the Portsmouth one on telly. And you might think you're only expecting 10, and then you get there and there was another 7 or 8 people that were just over from Sunderland for the weekend in Dublin. So you actually realise that the Twitter and the Facebook messages that you put out, there's actually people reading them that are coming to the meetup. So by all means, follow us on the social media and we'd love to see you here over in Dublin when you're over. Dublin _ Cats, yeah. And then we're just Irish Black Cats on Facebook and Irish Black Cats on Instagram.
Perfect. Get in touch with the guys. Now, one thing, obviously, we normally sort of speak about the game previously from like this previous weekend. Obviously, there was no game. Danny, any news at the Gillingham game?
Nothing. Apparently, no shots on target from both sides. So it feels like we're really missing a really good game here, lads.
I'm destroyed.
Half time now, is it?
Yeah, it's half time, 0-0.
Half time, 0-0. That sounds terrible.
I think the most interesting thing is Gillingham media team, Gillingham's Twitter, have a really random badge they've used for Sunderland. I mean, it's the same badge, but they've got an extended bridge on the badge. And I mean, just go have a look at it. When you hear this, just have a look, and it's just a random badge. I don't know where they've got it from.
What do you mean? So where we've got like the red and white stripes in the corners, it goes over to that bit, do you mean?
Yeah, so we've got the bridge on the right-hand section of the badge. It goes over to the left-hand side as well. So it branches out. It's odd. So go have a look at it.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yeah. Just right, lads. I've got one for you, actually, from today. And here's a shameless plug for a piece on the site. But I put up a piece on the site today about judging Phil Parkinson on how he's currently doing in the role. I was quite surprised on Twitter. I probably shouldn't be surprised at some of the reaction on Twitter, but I was quite surprised by a lot of the reaction simply saying that Parkinson has to go now. And even though I don't think I was his biggest fan beforehand, and I'm not particularly a big fan of his appointment, and he hasn't getting off to the best start, I'm not sure kind of chopping and changing this soon is the answer. But I mean, in terms of judging Phil Parkinson in his brief spell with us so far, and how you think, you know, things might pan out, and how long we should give him before we fairly judge him, or even, you know, as some people say, give him the axe. What have you guys got any thoughts on Parkinson's reign so far, and where we go with that?
The thing what people have to realise is he's only been in the job for what is it now, a month? And the biggest gripe every single Sunderland fan I can see has at the moment is the fact that the recruitment has been absolutely diabolical. There's no cohesion in the squad. No one bounces off each other. It's not a team. It's a squad full of individuals that don't really play well together. There's no pace in the team. There's no physicality in the team or athleticism in the team. And that isn't Phil Parkinson's problem. Well, it is his problem, but it's not his fault. He needs to get to January and we need reinforcements. Everyone's saying, oh, we would have been better off not keeping Jack Ross after all this was crap. Jack Ross is the man who had absolutely no prior knowledge of Football League, the English Football League. He didn't have a clue who he wanted to sign. It was down to Tony Coton coming up to him and saying, oh, this player's good. Do you want him? Oh, no, actually, I'll have this guy instead. Well, why are you saying that, Jack? You don't really know how this player is going to adapt. If Jack Ross stayed, we would have been in the same situation in January where we would have bought the wrong players to fit his system because he wanted a carbon copies in every single position. And he said that in his interview. He said, I'm happy with everyone in the team. If one comes out, his carbon copy can come in. That's not how you build a football team. You get a mix of players who suit different types of games. Especially in League One, where you need physicality. I don't know which player in our team, apart from maybe Lynch, who has any kind of physicality. So it's...
But Danny, just to butt in for a second there, just to come in on that. I mean, you were talking about that the team were kind of in chaos and kind of all over the place, and that's not down to Parkinson. But, I mean, just to play devil's advocate for what you said there, two defeats in 14 doesn't suggest that the players weren't playing as one kind of cohesive unit. That sounds pretty solid if you're only getting beat twice in 14 games. You know,
I agree to that.
I mean, I think, you know, Ross had his faults, but I'm not sure one of them you can throw at them is that they weren't playing as a team, because two defeats in 14 suggests that actually they might not have been hammering teams, but they were churning out results. It might not have been as good as we wanted, but they weren't getting beat.
I think a lot of Sunderland fans felt it was kind of backs to the wall, kind of, we scored, we'll defend. And I know he's came out and said that's fake news and all that, but it always felt like that. We would go ahead and we had nothing really on the attack. We couldn't really counter. I know Phil Parkinson's play is very direct, getting into the channels and whipping balls in, but wingers-wise, I know we've got Aidan McGeady, who's fantastic in, well, he should be fantastic in this league. There's no real pace. We can't get forward. We haven't got a deep line midfielder who can, like a brick shit house in that kind of hole where he can get us out of trouble. Obviously, we're in League One, so not every player is going to be fantastic, and it's getting the head round. Everyone's getting head round that players we have in League One aren't fantastic. But I still think the recruitment has been terrible. We've went through how many centre backs now? 8 centre backs, and that's all Jack Ross and Tony Coton. And I just feel like I with Parkinson. Carry on, sorry.
Sorry, I was going to echo your statements. I don't think you can judge Parkinson without even giving him a transfer window, because I think the philosophy of how he's going to play is going to be quite different to how Ross wanted to set up his team. And I think defensively we have improved. The fact of the matter is that the players Ross bought, the strikers he bought, have become absolutely toothless. And in hindsight, the only reason we were anywhere near promotion at the end of last season was for the goals that Maja had got us up until January. So I think anyone who's suggesting that Parkinson has to go now, you can never judge a manager until he can put his own stamp on a team. And Parkinson hasn't even been given that opportunity yet.
I actually think that was always going to happen with Parkinson. The issue was, I 100% agreed that Ross had to go. I think the issue has been that because he wasn't an immediate fan's choice, he's never had this honeymoon like period, or you know, this spell of grace where, you know, a couple of results have gone against him, and all of a sudden he's getting absolutely hammered for it. Now, you know, what are you going to do? Should he be sacked now? Of course he shouldn't. That's ridiculous. Exactly what Mike was just saying there. You know, you've got to give the man January, you know, to get some of his own players in. You know, and what do you do if you do sack him now? Get another manager in. What if he loses his next 2 or 3 games? Sack him after that. Exactly. You've made your decision. Also, we haven't made the decision, but you know, the club has made the decision that Parkinson's the man to take us forward. You know, and give him the chance to do it. You know, and the games he's lost, obviously a couple of been cup games that no one wanted to be in anyway. So, but yeah, you know, our results been ideal recently? No, of course they haven't. You know, no one is saying they are, but you know, yeah, give the man a chance to at least, you know, start implementing things. Give him January to bring some players in. So yeah, you know, I completely disagree with them comments saying he needs to be sacked now. It's just right.
I think another thing is, just to point in, is I don't think Jack Ross would have beaten Wickham. I don't think Jack Ross would have beaten Shrewsbury. I mean, to be fair, Shrewsbury, how many times did we hit the post and should have scored? Aidan McGeady missed 2 absolute sitters. We dominated that game, but I can't see Jack Ross, after getting hammered, and I mean absolutely hammered by Lincoln City. We were played off the park. Jack Ross wasn't going to take someone to Wickham Wanderers and win or draw. It wasn't going to happen. So Parkinson's losses are just the same as what Jack Ross would have got. So it's either trust a new man to get a transfer window correct when he gets the chance, and accept that Jack Ross wasn't the man.
And bizarrely enough, I mean, you just mentioned Wickham and Shrewsbury, and actually in terms of taking into account it was away and who the opposition were, those two were actually, I think, our most impressive performances under Parkinson, because especially Wickham, I thought we were unlucky at Wickham, who were a good team, and we went there and we lost 1-0, and we should have gotten something out of the game. Tranmere were just awful. I think most teams are going to beat Tranmere. Most teams are going to beat Southend. But actually, the two league games we've actually lost were probably two games where we've looked like a better team than we were under Ross.
I'll disagree with you on the Wickham one there. I didn't think we played at all well at Wickham. The other game, the Shrewsbury game, I think we hit the post twice or 3 times maybe. I thought we were unlucky then. But I must say, I think because Wickham was after he's been there 2 days, I think it was.
Yeah.
I did think that was a really poor performance against Wickham myself, but so we agreed to disagree on that one.
Yeah, but I was just surprised by the kind of barrage of messages just saying Parkinson out, and it just seems this early on to start calling for a change this soon. I mean, what chance do we stand if we're kind of going down that route all the time.
I guarantee you the team we have by the 1st of February will be a completely different outfit to the teams now playing. I mean, we were talking earlier about even McGeady. Is he going to be a Parkinson player? I was meant to say earlier on, I actually think, I don't know who said it, but I'd be fairly certain that McGeady will be phased out of the squad as well, because I don't think he's the kind of player that Parkinson wants. And I think give the man a chance, give him January to get his players in, and I think you'll see a different animal come February. It's people saying on Twitter he has to be sacked now. It's just this culture that's there at the moment. You can't give anyone a chance. But I'd say, yeah, absolutely, give him January, and you'll definitely see a new team by after the transfer window, I'd say.
Yeah, I think just to add on to that, we just need to get to January, and we need to get to January in the playoff spots or near enough, close enough to the automatics, and then we'll make our assault in the new year. That's the only thing we need to do. We're 3 points off third with two games in hand. Well, we were. I haven't seen the table recently, but we're not in a bad position.
Nice one.
We'll get promoted. Simple as that.
One thing I do want to mention, say, because there was no game, it was a England game when you went with internationals this weekend. I just want to quickly get your guys' thoughts on supporting on the national team. And obviously, both for England and Ireland, Sunderland have had quite a few players. Bizarrely, Michael, I don't know if you know this, but while I was Googling Sunderland Irish players, did you know that Sunderland are the most Irish side in the Premier League? This is a fact up to 2017. So we had the most Irish, and this is both Northern and Southern Ireland. But we had the most Irish players out of any Premier League team. So obviously, football started in 1992. Yeah. Sounds a fun.
Sure, under Roy Keane, he bought the whole squad.
We had a lot. I was going through the list actually of who we had for Ireland, South Ireland, and England. Obviously, there's loads for Ireland. So even as recent as like Jimmy Dunn and Mark Wilson, Aidan McGeady, we had obviously David Mailer, personal favourite Andy Reid. Used to love him.
Don't forget Shaggy, Paul McShane.
He was literally the next person I was about to say, Paul McShane. And then some really random rubbish ones like Roy O'Donovan, which might explain why. Yeah, that little stat. Obviously, all the way back down to the real king, Charlie Hurley. But no, it was quite an interesting read, actually.
Good facts, yeah.
A little fun fact for you, next to your Irish Black Cats meetup. For England, since 92, is quite sparse. Obviously, we've got Kevin Phillips, Mickey Gray, McCann, with his one cap. Do you know who picked Gavin McCann, by any chance? Which manager?
Ericsson.
It was Ericsson. It was Ericsson's first game where he picked a load of random players, and Gavin McCann being one of them. Darren Bent, probably the most, probably the best England international to come from Sunderland, Jordan Henderson. And then obviously we've claimed Danny Welbeck, Fraser Campbell and Jermaine Defoe. So we've not done too bad for strikers, actually, Sunderland, over the last sort of 15, 20 years for England.
Did Fraser Campbell play for England?
Yeah, he had one game.
Oh, my God.
I think, if I remember rightly, he went for a stage where he came back from injury under O'Neill, and he scored that wonder goal v Norwich.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then he got in the team on the back of that. I think he came on as a sub, like maybe played like 20 minutes or something, but it's a cap, it counts. And then, yeah, obviously, Jermaine Defoe. So, one thing I was sort of thinking about earlier, though, like being an exile, for me, I actually quite like England games because supporting has been, as I said, being the only sort of Sunderland supporter in the village. None of my mates support Sunderland. So they're all like Arsenal fans or Spurs fans. And they'll all go down the pub together and watch Spurs or Arsenal play. But no one wants to come down to me. But for England games, is the one time I can actually get, support the same team as my mates, which is quite a sad little a sad little thing I noticed. Yourselves, guys, what do you think about England? Are you bothered by England games? Chris, is that something you ever get? I'll say it's in the national weekend this weekend, so
I didn't watch them. Well, the problem is with games like the qualifiers, it's not that attractive to me watching games that are that one sided. I mean, the first one, I can't even remember. What was the final score? 6-7? I don't even know.
I must admit, I didn't watch any of the games either this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point? I mean, I'd rather watch... I mean, don't get us wrong, if we win, brilliant, get on with it. But, I mean, you're going to watch a game that you know it's going to be one-sided. It's going to be one team backing the other into the corner, and then it's just how many goals they're going to score. It's not all that entertaining. I'd rather see a competitive game. And I'm just seeing a message. Is it 2-0? Are we winning 2-0?
If we are,
Danny and Lincoln.
If we are, it's only just happened. So let me have a look.
That might be a different game, but
no changes at half time. We're back underway. 27 seconds ago, there's no goals. Don't worry.
I must be saying a message for a different game. Anyway, so England, it doesn't bother me, but I'd rather see competitive games. And I really don't want to bring this up again, but I actually really enjoyed watching the Ireland one last night. You were kind of getting nervous towards the end, even though I wasn't kind of into it either way. I'd like to see Ireland qualify, but I can't, I'm not kind of a fan or I'm not like a huge fan or anything like that. But because it was competitive and there was something at stake, it was brilliant to watch. Yeah, so qualify is like, and especially the dead rubber the other day that would already qualified, and I'd rather do something else, to be honest.
Fair enough. Danny, I'll ask the same question. I'm literally only asking these questions because I've done some homework and printed off some like players that played for England. I want to make my time useful. Danny, did you watch the qualifiers?
I had them on. Wasn't anything really interesting. Echo the same sentiments, really. I think the friendlies, it's difficult to really have any kind of interest in them because I'm playing against crap nations who we should really beat. I think when the World Cup comes around, it's exciting, isn't it? You get swept up by fever. It's that uncertainty as well. You're not the best team. It's that, are we going to win? Are we not going to win? Are we actually going to do something in this tournament? It's just something that I think it's that uncertainty about the football that makes it really exciting and compelling. And the friendlies just don't do it for me. We're playing players who probably aren't going to really get to the in the 23-man squad. Trying out different things, and I mean, people enjoy it and it's football to watch, that's why I have it on, but it's just something on in the background whilst I probably be on my phone or on my laptop. It's, boring.
Well, to go from a uncompetitive game to a ultra competitive game, it is time for Playing Away. Now, I have picked a game, and this game is from the 17th of November 2002. Now, just to recap of the rules, the guys take in turns to pick a player from the starting 11 from that game. They have two lives. They pick a wrong player or pass, they lose a life. If they name a sub, they get another go. Winner is the last man standing. In result of both losing a life on the same go, sudden death, if all players named while two or more are still in, all get a point. So last week, they actually cleared the whole 11. So all three of them got a point. If you're the last man standing, you get 2 points. Scores are kept to the end of the season, and we see who comes out on top. So at the moment, Niall is on 2 points. Chris, you yourself, John Stacey, and who was it? Bomber, all have 1 point. So the game is Liverpool 0, Sunderland 0 on the 17th of November 2002. Now, I always like to give a little clue. I think it does help. We were wearing our light blue Nike kit with the Reg Vardy sponsor. Light blue shirt with white shorts. We drew 0-0. I also give the manager. The manager was Howard Wilkinson. So this is actually one of his better results, if I'm honest. Danny, I've got you to go first. So it was Sunderland 0. Sorry, it was Liverpool 0, Sunderland 0.
Going to go for the easy one, Kevin Phillips.
Straight away, Kevin Phillips is there.
Yes.
Chris, you're next.
Well, as soon as you said Howard Wilkinson and Liverpool, I remember one player having an absolute blinder in this game. And
don't take it off me.
It was like a one-man team. He was in goal, and it was Jürgen Mattsson.
100%. This was one of those games where Liverpool could have been playing till about midnight. They were not going to get past him. Now, to give you a bit, I didn't want to say it beforehand, but obviously to give the game a bit of context, it was a Sky game. And as you say, Jürgen Mattsson was, we didn't have a shot, or a corner, but he stopped wave after wave of attack, which I think, because he went on to Chelsea afterwards, I believe. which was pretty much off the back of this game. But yeah, so Jurgen Macho definitely in there. So unfortunately, Michael, he's nicked that one off you.
Absolutely raging now, because literally the only guy I could remember clearly was Phillips that was playing that game. Because I literally remember it as a game when Macho was unreal. I'm gonna have to think back now. Did we have Stephen Wright right back then?
I've got him written down.
He was not playing. He was at time. I'm just double checking the subs. No, he didn't play. So you've got lost one life, Mike, I'm afraid. Sorry, Danny, you're up next.
All right, so Howard Wilkinson, he came in after Reed, didn't he?
Yes.
Quinny had gone by then. Was that the season we replaced Quinny with the worst number nine in the world?
I think you've got it.
Which one? I've had a few.
You said it, so it's probably true. It's Orlando Flo.
That's the one. He's up front with Phillips.
And I've got another one as well now.
So, Chris, you're up next, mate. Actually, Danny, I know who you've got already. So, Chris, you're up next. Please to take Danny's one.
2002. Trying to think just who was around at the time. Mickey Gray?
Mickey Gray. He was in the team.
Nice.
So, Michael, you're up next. Who you got?
Was Kilbane playing?
Kevin Kilbane, he was playing.
Yes, good in.
Trust you to go for the Irish player. Right, so as it stands, everyone's Michael's lost a life. Danny, Chris, and still have not lost any. Danny, you're up next.
Marcus Stewart.
Marcus Stewart was on the bench. He came on, so you do get another go. And I knew you were going to say Marcus Stewart.
Yeah, because they signed the same time, didn't they?
That's exactly it. So you've got another go, Danny.
Mickey Gray's been said. Someone we were talking about in the group chat, actually, earlier, about after John Potter left.
Don't. Yeah. That's exactly one I had.
Gavin McCann, please.
Gavin McCann, with his one cap for England, he's there as well.
Nightmare, Danny. It was from that chat as well, exactly what you've just said. That's exactly why I had him.
Quick recap, we've had Jurgen Macho, Kevin Kilbane, Gavin McCann, Tori Anjay Flo, Marcus, Kevin Phillips, Michael Gray, and Marcus Stewart, who was a sub. Chris, your go.
I had Gavin McCann. I had him. He was in my back pocket. By the way, Danny, did you have, when you went for Marcus Stewart, were you thinking that Howard Wilkinson actually played three up front at Anfield?
I said we had no shots on goal. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, because Howard Wilkinson was the weirdest person ever. He used to put Stewart on the right wing, didn't he? I'm pretty sure he did. Someone did.
He'd have had Tora do a floor right back or something.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, three up front and fifth. Brilliant.
Right.
Oh, you've got four still to go.
I'm only going for this one because I had him as one of the questions on the quiz this week, the weekend. And he was the main pitcher I had up. So that's the only reason he's in my head. So I'm going to go for a bit of a stab in the dark, and I'm going to go for Phil Babb.
Phil Babb's there. Michael, it passes to you. You need to get this before you are out.
Okay. For the last 2 minutes there, I just started writing a load of names down of lads I can remember from back then.
All Irish.
All Irish. This guy was very fairly underrated when he was at us. And I honestly don't know if he was playing before or after. But Jody Craddock.
Jody Craddock's there. We've got two left.
I don't run down. I was thinking it might have been. It depends what the other defenders are now.
So you've got three left, apologies. So you've got three left, not two. So you've got two defenders and a midfielder of sorts.
We had Emerson Tom as a centre-back. I don't know if he was still there. We had Steve Bold, probably gone. I think his legs have gone by then. The Swedish guy, I don't remember.
You've got to pick somebody.
Auckland?
Joachim Bjorklund's there. A day out of two.
So Emmy Tom couldn't have been there. That's
so you've got, I don't say,
got two centre backs. Okay.
So Macho, Bjorklund, Kilbane, Craddock, Babb, McCann, Flo, Phillips, Gray. Two left. Chris, it's down to you.
Oh, I've got Bjorkman, Craddock, Babb, Kilbane, Gray. We've got McCann. I'm trying to figure out these positions myself.
He's got
like three centre halves. He's got Kilbane and Gray. He hasn't McCann. We must have another centre midfielder.
Kilbane didn't really play left back for us, did he? I know later in his career he was a left back.
Who's a centre mid?
Yeah, we've only got McCann.
I actually think Danny's comments about Wilkinson playing random players is quite apt for one of these, to be honest. Because I'm getting in front of me, I can't work out where he
plays. Struggling for players, right. I think the only one I can really think of that would have played most games.
I've got one.
So
who's that? Julio Arca?
Oh,
yep.
No.
No, Arca isn't. So Chrissy knows a knife.
I think
I've got it because of
I think I have one
as well.
I think I have one.
Guys, you'll go, Michael.
Can you just name the lads out again? I'm trying to get formation in my head here.
Right, so you've got Jurgen Macho, Bjorklund, Kevin Kilbane, Jody Craddock, Phil Babb, Gavin McCann, Torre Andre Flo, Kevin Phillips, Nicky Gray.
Okay, so I think we're missing a left back. Because originally I was thinking Kevin Kilbane was left back. But is it another Irish guy playing left back?
Wait, you tell me.
George McCarthy.
There you go. George McCarthy. We've got one left. So I'm going to start rushing you guys. One player left to pick.
So he's playing. He's got McCann, Kilbane and Mickey Gray. All three left-sided players.
Is it my go?
It is Danny's go, yeah.
So when Sunderland played Liverpool, look, I remember around that time. I think this person scored, and if Stuart
in the home game,
yeah,
we won 2-1.
I think you're on something out.
Yeah.
Go on, Danny. Who is it?
It's another one of our youthies, Proctor.
Michael Proctor is the last one.
Come on!
I didn't think he would have started that game though.
He did. Well, that's why, because I thought he was a striker.
The whole thing about Wilkinson.
That's exactly it. So well done, guys. So yeah, in 17th November 2002, Sunderland drew 0-0 with Liverpool, where they absolutely battered us and should have won about 8-0. But we've got the point with Macho, Bjorklund, McCartney, Kilbane, Craddock, Babb, Proctor, McCann, Flo, Phillips, Gray. Well done, guys. So again,
that's a bad team, to be fair.
I'm so glad one of you said Macho, because I had Sorensen and Poom written down.
Poom actually
so much.
Tuned enough after that.
Yeah, we signed him, didn't we? And we had him in the Championship season the next season.
Yeah.
I've tried to write those players out as we've got them in a formation so I could get other players. I've got three down the left-hand side. I've got three up front. I've got three centre-halves, one centre midfielder. I haven't got a clue what he was doing.
How did we draw that game?
I've been saved because I had Stephen Wright, obviously the Macho and Puma. I would have went for both of them two. Sorensen and Puma before I even went for Macho. So the gods have shone down on me here.
No, well done, guys. I was impressed with that, actually, that you got that. But yeah, so now you're all on 1 point each. So Chris, you're actually now level with Niall at the top of the league. But obviously, in the early days, it doesn't count at the moment. No point in looking at the league to at least 10 games in. So... we will move on. We have been putting the questions out on Twitter again this week. And then once again, you guys come up trumps for us. So we just keep throwing out a whole array of questions. So this week's was, who is Sunderland's unluckiest fans? Basically, want to get your losing and winning streaks following the lads. There was questions about being in the away end, nightmare away journeys, games postponed, and what do you do? What you did. Meeting SAFC players in random, non-libelous places. And then exiles, what the locals think when they see you in your SAFC top. And then also, just any random funny stories that you want to send us, which we do like. The first sort of question, what did have a lot of people coming back on, who is the unluckiest Sunderland fan? And there's a few times we've got sort of speaking in the group chat about this, about basically how many games we get to and how rubbish we are. I hadn't seen us win at the stadium alight for 4 years. Thanks for that Southend game a couple of weeks ago. I went to that and we saw us won that. Danny, I don't think have you seen us win this season yet? I don't think you have you?
No. I can't remember the last time I saw us win away.
And I think that's the depressing thing about being an exile. I say, because sometimes we've been through the seasons and we've only won like 5-6 games in a year, and maybe two away.
The issue is that I went to quite a lot of games last season, and I still can't remember last. I think I was in the Donny home end last season, and I think we won that 1-0. I think that's the last game I saw us win away.
But you was in the home end?
Yeah.
Oh, Bruce, so you ticked two of my questions this week.
Sorry.
That's good. That's fine, mate. But yes, we had quite a few comments that had come through. One guy, first and foremost, one of the people who did sort of message us was Bomber from the Exiles. And I was obviously, you probably heard him before, Bomber from Colchester, as he's known. He figured he must be the unluckiest fan. He's been to 47 games following the lads and seen 4 wins. Oh. Now, that's give up. And the fact that he's even made it right down what games he saw us win. So it was like Forest away, 04-05, Spurs at home, 2009-2010, which was that amazing game where we beat Spurs 3-1, because I was at this one as well, actually, when Darren Bent scored, I think he missed 2 penalties, and he might have scored 2, and Zenden scored a wonder volley, and then Anton Ferdinand also scored a disallowed, did a Michael Jackson dance. So to be fair to him, he did see a really good game, but that's only one of his 4 wins. And then also Bristol Rovers away and Doncaster at home. They were both 2018-2019. And quite apt, actually, about from what the playing away game was, he's got an 8.5% win percentage, still better than Howard Wilkinson. That was his own words.
But imagine how much you celebrate a win, if that's how often you see it.
Oh, that's it's just depressing. So when the Exiles group do our next road trip again, no one invited that guy. Jesus. Other people who came in, Phil King. I need to try and work out how old Phil is, because he's basically, I didn't see the lads win until just before my 33rd birthday. Exiled in Hampshire from age 8. Never saw them win at Roker Park, and first win was Tuesday, 10th of August 2004 at Stadium Light. Won 3-1 v Crewe, Robertson, Stewart and Elliott scoring. Seen plenty of draws and embarrassing defeats, all the shot away. Again, because if he saw his first game at 8 and he's not seen a win since he was 33, that's 25 years. Now that's, again, it just boggles the mind. Luke Huggan, between beating MK Dons in August 2013 and beating Notts County December 2018, every time I went to the match, I didn't see the lads win once in 5 years. Again, I think that's just the disappointing, like the depressing thing, not really disappointing thing, that's for Sunderland. Like the Premier League season where we went down, I went 9 games that season. We lost all 9 and I didn't see us score a goal. So like I didn't even celebrate anything. One guy though who is a bit more lucky, or well, at least he was John Lambert, who as a kid, he didn't see Sunderland lose in his first 12 games. So, you know, he must have thought at the time it was always like this. You know, how disappointing now he's a grown man, we're rubbish. One of the questions was games postponed. And Michael, you've got a story. Well, you've got a couple of stories, I believe, on this one.
Yeah, 2 stories. Don't know if you remember you probably do. We're due to play Bolton under Steve Bruce just after Christmas. It was like 9th of January or something. So it was just early in the new year. And it was snowing everywhere. Like it was snowing all over England and Ireland at the time. We actually walked around for that occasion. Was that we got up in the morning to go to the match. And both the game and the flight were cancelled, so that was all right. But the worst one was we went to Reading under Martin O'Neill, first home game of the season. It's got the flight over, you know, you have that early season enthusiasm, you know, it hasn't gone shit yet, like it does most seasons, especially when we were in the Premier League. So, because I think it was the year we just signed Fletcher, and we were staying in Seaburn, just in one of the B&Bs beside the Roker Hotel, and we got up and looked out the window, and my dad just turns to me and goes, "This game's hardly going to be called off," because it was absolutely lashing rain. And I was like, "Oh no, sure, even a bit of rain, like it'd be grand, it'd just be really wet." He goes, yeah, it'd be grand. And we went into the Roker Hotel about quarter to 2 then. We were like, why is there no Sunderland fans in here? And I just turned to the barman and was like, why is there no fans here? It's usually packed here. He goes, "The match is off." And we just looked at each other and we're going, "Are you having a laugh?" So literally all we could do was just sit in the pub and watch the games for the afternoon. But like, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it's just so frustrating when you travel over and you rock up for the game and it's just like called off. It was not a nice experience, I have to say.
And what I was thinking though, was was that when, was it Rihanna got so, the blame
something
for
about
it?
The contest, wasn't it? They blamed the contest for the pitch not being in good nick or something. Was it something like that?
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't get games called off in August for waterlogged pitches. That is very poor.
I think I got caught by that game as well, you know. I came up for, I think it was at the start of the season, and the game was, it was lashing it down all day. You know, thinking, this can't get called off, can it? And it got called off. It was typical.
But it was the only game in England called off that day as well, so it had to be the pitch, like, you know, it's in the from the concert, like.
Well, I actually remember that because that game in at home, like brought down Milton Keynes, it was sunshine all day. No one could understand why a game was being called off a couple hundred miles away because of a waterlogged pitch.
Yeah, it was a farce.
But no. One of the other questions was that we're meeting players in random places. Now, John Lambert, he also wrote again. So we had two. And one was that he met Niall Quinn at Wembley, which isn't that a random place, but still, we'd all like to meet Quinny. The other one, though, he sent in was, I kept bumping into Michael Reddy in random places to the point he asked us if we are stalking him, which I like that because that is a random player, Michael Reddy. So, yeah, happy days. Next one was also Bill Pritchard, who on his first trip to Sunderland when he was 5, met Dickie Ord, who needs cancer now, eh? He was withdrawing money from a cash point, and I went over and tugged on his sleeve for a photo and a signing. So there we go then. If you have any stories, and again, what I always say is we want them really, really random. So find us on Twitter on the Roker Report podcast or the Roker Report Twitter. But before we go, I must have one bit of branch news, and that is from our friends at NASA, the North American Supporters Association. Next weekend, when the lads play Coventry, fans in they've got basically getting together in Barrie, Ontario, Charlotte, North Carolina, and New York City. Find the details on the Facebook page. But that is it, gentlemen. Danny, it's been a pleasure. Any goals yet?
Looks a bit boring. 0-0. Aidan McGeady's came on for Duncan Watmore. 71 minutes played. And apparently the only interesting thing Gillingham have to tweet is the fact that their players have run around. Great.
We've missed nothing. Yeah. Chris, thank you very much for your time, mate.
Always a pleasure, Brett. Thank you very much.
And saving the pod for coming in last minute because no one else did. And Michael, again, thank you very much for being on, mate.
Dead on. Cheers, mate. Enjoyed it.
Speak to you all soon. Thanks for listening.
Cheers, Brett.
Cheers, guys. We are done.
Cheers.
Thanks for that. Oh, I fucking couldn't get words out of my mouth. Say North Carolina. Brilliant. Stay in.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.